4 pages. That's how long the Constitution is. If you haven't read it, I hope you feel as stupid as I felt last year when I started this show and I hadn't read it yet. 4 pages. That's the whole thing. That's our whole country based on 4 pages, which is pretty amazing, the Constitution. But the thing is, it worked. Well, it worked, and now this country's about to break up. People see this country as either, you know, the last best hope, hard work and fair play, or exploitation and greed, depending on, you know, whatever, however you like to see things. And like I said, we're gonna break up. This country's gonna get divorced. Red states, blue states. A house divided cannot stand. And you know who said that? Kris Jenner, that's correct. And and we're gonna break up because people keep trying to tell each other what to do. That's our whole thing. I want people to act this way. I want people to act that way. But the whole point of the Constitution is nobody gets to tell each other what to do. We don't get along, we don't agree on anything, but everybody loves the Constitution. I mean, soccer moms and strippers both talk about it. You know, cops and criminals, the Tea Party and the ACLU, everybody believes in the Constitution. Yeah, Declaration of Independence never really took off the way people thought it would. Even though that was important too, that was like our divorce papers from England. That was, you know, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary, it's not you, England, it's us, but we have to walk away. But the Constitution, everybody here knows it. We all know what it says. Nobody had to read it, you know, you can't, 4 pages, like I said, you have this kind of time, but, you know, everybody knows what it says because you can quote it when you've friends get pulled over outside a bar. You have the friend that's a lawyer. Don't worry, they can't touch you if you're within 50 feet of a U.S. mailbox. It's a federal offense. You know, that's the thing about the Constitution. It's the only document. The drunker you get, the better you understand what it says. You know? And that's because it was written by the founding fathers. Our Constitution was written during a convention, which is a 4-month bar crawl they had in Philadelphia in like 1787. You know? That's why our national character, our personality as a country, is kind of a bar personality. People looked at us like the shining light on the beacon, like fun. They're having fun, the bar's open. And, you know, we were a friendly country, a generous country. We could be a little pushy sometimes, though, not read the room, you know. Just like, try democracy. Give it a try. The guy won't even give it a sip, you know. He's like, it won't work over here. Trust me, it'll work in Iraq. Here, try it, you know. You know. We're a flirtatious country. We're like, come on over to our place after it closes. Everybody, you're tired, you're poor, you're huddled masses, don't worry. Then wake up the next day, Jesus Christ, what are all these people doing in my house? I'm gonna feed everybody. I mean, who's out of my couch? I can't cook breakfast for everybody. You know? We're the world's police. Whenever there's trouble, the whole world still comes to us. America, 2 tribes in the Middle East are about to go to war. We're like, oh, ho, break it up, guys. Seriously, truce. Here's $20. Buy them both a drink. No more fight, right? They're like, okay, the minute we walk away, they're like, every time we fight, they give us $20. I don't know, you want to stop? We borrow money that we need and then lend the money that we just borrowed. Only drunks do shit like this. Do you understand that? We never know how much we have on us. We're always like, hold on. I had trillions of dollars a couple of years ago. I know. A couple of wars, a few bailouts. I can't be that broke, you know? We were the country everybody just looked to because we were always happy, America. And now we're unhappy. Like I said, we're about to break up. It used to be Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Now we'll take a scene from Reservoir Dogs. Well, they will. Everybody's... And we're unhappy for a couple of reasons. One is we got to know each other, because none of the states knew each other. We didn't know each other. Nobody knew Arizona and New York didn't know each other. You didn't ever see each other, but the internet got invented. And so they're like, oh my God, that states like that? I didn't realize that. And the other thing was we went broke. And when you're broke, nothing's that cute anymore, you know? And why'd we go broke? We went broke because we're trying to make everybody happy. That's the American dream. Everybody, no matter who you are, you just keep going. Rich, rich is rich, more rich than anybody. Middle class, rich is middle class. Make sure they come. Poor, even poor, rich is poor people. Everybody gets a flat screen, gets a cell phone. Immigrants, everybody come on over. Come on over, everybody. Illegal, you come over too, don't worry, we're not looking. Some people don't want to come over. Foreign aid, send over money for the people who don't want to come over too. You know. And we went broke trying to make everybody happy. And where is it written in our Constitution that we're supposed to go broke trying to make everybody happy? In the preamble. Actually, that's what the preamble says. The preamble says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, because perfect is fine for other countries, I respect that, more perfect is better for this country. And more perfect is very expensive, you know. Plastic surgery, more perfect, you know. You know. Establish justice, that laws, lawyers, lawsuits, you know. Ensure domestic tranquility. You know how much money it costs to keep 300 million people tranquil every year? You need jobs, you need, you know, gadgets for everybody, food, antidepressants, tranquilizers. And provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, defense and welfare. There's 50% of the budget right there every year. No, that's the right and left right there, defense, welfare. Secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, because every generation is supposed to do better than the next, or somehow we failed. That was a sustainable idea somebody came up with. Do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America, you know. Now, if that's not a drunken, delusional promise, I don't know, you know. That's one of those things where the next day you're supposed to wake up and go, listen, I said a lot of shit I didn't mean last night. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that's supposed to be, you know. But not these founding fathers, not these FFFs. They said, we can do it. They're so brilliant. Today, the country's gridlocked, and people still don't critique them. They still say they're brilliant. Even people that hate the Founding Fathers love the Constitution. The Founding Fathers, to this day, it's foolproof. You're like, hey, the country's gridlocked. It's not working. They're like, right, that's good. That means it's working. It's not working. That's how it's not supposed to work. That's how it works. It's not working. Really, it's not supposed to not work this well because you did a pretty good job. Yeah. That's why this country got formed, because these guys knew they were brilliant. The geniuses knew they were geniuses. Everybody else, all the other colonies couldn't break away from England, never mind physically, psychologically, because they thought England was superior. These guys didn't think that. They came in like they're quoting Cicero, you know what I mean? Plato, they come in, you know, they're like, yeah, I talked to the governor of my colony. He doesn't even know who Montesquieu is. I mean, this guy's an idiot. He never heard of David Hume. Hey, did you read? Read that John Locke piece and Poor Richard's Almanac? Yeah, it was pretty good, you know. They were like brilliant guys. You had 8 geniuses, then you had 23 badass war veterans, so they had that natural cocky, you know, they're coming in all smoking, like, yeah, I saw Bunker Hill, I heard about that all fucking. We had them, kid, Bunker Hill, they didn't know what the fuck, you know, the Massachusetts contingent, like, yeah, fucking kid. South Carolina's like, yeah, we took them down, they didn't know anything, they're coming in red coats. I mean, it was like, shooting fish in a barrel, I swear to God, you know. They got the war stories, they're smoking. And then you had like James Madison. He was the whole guy that set it up, because a lot of people weren't there, by the way. Adams, Jefferson, no accident. I'm sure Madison's sick of hearing their names. He's just as much of a genius as them. So they happen to be out of the country when he decides to hold the convention. Basically, he's just sick of hearing. It's like George Harrison, you know. At a certain point, I'm sure he's like, you know, he's sick of hearing about Paul and John. Here comes the sun. That's the convention for him was Here Comes the Sun, the Bangladesh concert. And so you got Madison, who's like the super nerd of all time. He puts the whole thing together. He knows he's got to get like a popular guy, gets George Washington, because everybody loves George Washington. He's like the badass of the country. Everybody just wants to meet him. He brings him in. The whole country just loves George Washington for some reason. And then Ben Franklin, it was in Philly. He's like the godfather of the whole convention. You know, he gets up and gives a big opening speech. I'd like to welcome our friends from as far away as New Hampshire and the good people of Georgia. How did we ever let it get this far? I don't know. But, yeah, Madison gives the opening speech. It's basically reading everybody the Riot Act about how the country's about to fall apart. He goes, you want to be England again? Because the only thing they had in common was like England shit. You know, everybody fought the war separately. Like, there was like 8 different people. So the only thing in common was I heard Cornwallis got sent to India. Hey, karma, man. See, you act like an asshole. You know. And then Madison's like, we're going to be England again if we keep it up. Our country's falling apart. We were like, you know, the Soviet states breaking up. Bosnia, when it broke, it was everybody's attacking each other. Same problems we have now, by the way. Just all, you know, we held it off for this long. And he's like, you want to be England? Everyone's like, no, no, you know, yeah. New York, you'll be Holland again. You know, You forgot what that was like. You wear wooden shoes, live in a windmill, you know. You walk out your front door every day, you get sucker punched by your own home, you know. Fucking holler. And, so right away, there's problems. You know, nobody wanted to show up, by the way, just like now. We need another constitutional convention, but people are too busy. We're gonna have like 8 Comic-Cons every year, but we don't have to, you know. We can't organize a constitutional convention. Massachusetts came with their shit attitude because they thought they invented the country. They're like, yeah, Plymouth Rock kid, don't thank me now, you know. And where's George? I want to meet George Washington. New York and Philly kind of knew each other from, yeah, Valley Forge. I remember, cold, this guy. My balls are like cobblestones. That's how cold it was this day. Yeah. And then the South, and it was already a problem, North and South. South came, there were two Souths. There's the gentleman South, Virginia, which is George Mason, Madison, they're like the erudite, and then it was the dirty South, the rest of the South, the hardcore South, you know. You didn't even talk to them. If you wanted to say something to them, you talked to Virginia, and they would pass the message along to the rest of the South. It was like Jeff Foxworthy and Larry the Cable Guy, you know. If you want to book Larry the Cable Guy, you talk to Jeff Foxworthy, Larry just shows up. He doesn't talk to you, you know. And the South came with the attitude like, we're safe for one drink. If I don't like what I'm hearing, I'm getting the hell out of it, you know. So Madison basically reads the problem, you know, just like today, all the same problems. Immigration, naturalization was a big issue. Debt was a big issue. States versus federal rights, all these big issues, you know, goes down the list. They're all like, all right, you know, listen to this guy, you know. And then he's like, I'm done. Anybody, did I forget something? One guy goes, well, what about slavery? And the whole room got just like this room got. Everybody's like, oh, geez, he's gonna go there? What the fuck? North went in there. They all said, we're getting rid of slavery. It's inhumane. Ben Franklin, once again, you know, slavery will destroy us in the years to come. I believed that then, and I believe it today. It's not like shipbuilding or rum or even molasses, which is something most people seem to want nowadays. You know. So they told the South, like, we're getting rid of slavery. South's like, okay, we're taking tobacco, we'll see you later. They're like, whoa, whoa, come on. You know it's inhumane. Yeah, and you have indentured servants, but don't worry about it. You're like, wait, wait. And they basically said, okay, look, no importing of slaves after 1803, whatever it was. Basically, the compromise, nobody ever said a compromise was fair. You know what I mean? The first sellout, they call it the original sin of the Constitution. And thank God, it doesn't affect black and white relations today. But back then it was a big deal. And yeah, it still resonates in everybody in the United States, black and white. Black people still don't trust the system. White people still have white guilt from that day. Black people still don't trust the system. I go to the train station, there's a black guy, is the train coming? Supposed to, you know. We'll see what happens. What do you think the whole black community and the police, black community, the police, all that tension goes for, because the police are the system, the nation of laws. They're the ones that go in. Black people are what? First of all, who thought that plan wouldn't work? Yet the black community festering, raising in the sun, looking at the dream deferred, fuming for hundreds of years over the system, but they can't really see, and it's not tangible, but they know they don't like the system. And then we're saying to 23-year-old white kid, listen, we're gonna give you a gun and a souped-up car. Go in there and start telling them what to do, all right? They're like, are they gonna get pissed? No, I don't think so. Just kind of tell them you represent the system and just say, can I see your hands? Who lives around here? Open that car. Shit like that. See what happens. You know. But everybody always says we need a racial conversation, but there's not a racial conversation. People just go racist. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, yeah. You know. Nobody talks, you know, in detail. The problem is, people just say well-intentioned. There's a lot of undercurrent on both sides that don't get discussed. You need to have a real racial show every week on TV, and you have people disgruntled, not just people well-intentioned. I'm talking about a white guy that grew up in Baltimore, a black guy that grew up in Idaho. They might have some things to say about the other race, but they're not very flattering. And you have the host could be people from the other race that are trusted by the opposite race. Oprah, obviously, for the white people, you know. And for the black people, I don't know. I would have said Robin Thicke last year, but I don't know what happened to him. He fell apart. Macklemore, Iggy Azalea, I don't know. You know, it's not, they get picked up. And a lot of people say, Why even listen to the Constitution? It's obviously garbage. These guys wrote it. They were slave owners. And yeah, but sometimes you just have to look at the writing and take that and not look at the person that did the writing. It's like Phil Spector, you know? Yeah, he's a murderer, but Be My Baby was a pretty good song. You know? And anyway, the original sin of the Constitution, the second thing was the class system. Article 1, legislative. They said, we're going to get rid of the class system because England, there was only two classes. It was, you know, royalty and relatives of royalty. There was no middle class. That was it. We invented the middle class. James Madison basically invented the middle class. But they admitted, the founding fathers, they said, look, rich, we're going to make a Senate. It's going to be for the rich people. And to this day, that's how it falls out. Rich people get to say, this is unacceptable. I'm going to call my senator. The middle class people are like, this is bullshit. I'm going to email my congressman's assistant. And poor people go, this is fucked up. I'm going to yell at the TV and see what happens. And they said, we're going to set it up for the people. Basically, all based on the bar, like I said, because they're at the bar and they're kind of looking, and the waiters at the bar, they said, we'll be the waiters. We'll be like the waiters. The people will be like the customers. We come up to them, what do you want? Whatever you want, the customer is always right. The people, House of Representatives, we represent you. You are just us. We're going to get you whatever you want. You still have to pay, so you're paying taxes, but it's you that's really, it's like going to a Springsteen concert. You go to see Springsteen, the whole night it's like the working man, the working man. But meanwhile, he's not giving away those seats. You still have to pay to see Bruce Springsteen, you know? And the working man thing is kind of phony because first of all, Bruce, if you really give a shit about the working man, you're not going to do a 4.5-hour concert on a Tuesday night, you know. The worker man's got to get up the next day. Bruce is sleeping in. Some exhausted iron worker burns his fingers off because Bruce wanted to do a 37-minute Rosalita at 11:05. You know, I mean, yeah. Then you had Article 2 was president. They said this was going to be based on reflection and choice rather than accident and force. That's what Madison said. You got to pick your leader. The king, it didn't matter. You got to pick, we pick our president based on, do you like this personality? Invented the public personality. The king, it didn't matter. Nobody was like, I don't like this king's personality. People were like, so what? He's the second son of the House of Essex of the Duke of York, you goddamn idiot. A good point. I didn't think it through, I guess. Yeah, I guess not. Once again, they were in a convention drinking, so it's based on the guy you kind of put in charge. They're not in charge, but they're the person that kind of tells you what the mood of the bar is. You always have the one friend that you kind of have that just lets you know what's going on the whole night. He's sort of a leader personality, but they're not in charge of you, but they tell you, look, they get to a point, okay, you watch our money, the Department of Treasury, you watch the door, they get to tell the bouncers, make sure nobody screws around. They have the power, you know, they'll tell you, like, look, here's what's happening now. In a few minutes, we gotta be careful. George is about to get in a fight. Delaware's throwing up. South Carolina's breaking up with their boyfriend. North Carolina, they're crying in the corner. We might go across the street. We're just not sure what's going on yet, you know? And they have veto power, veto. When legislators like, we wanna do shots. No more shots, guys, we gotta get up tomorrow. You know? Legislators, it's my money, I know, but still, we got to talk, you know, you always have the power, separation of powers, you know. And once again, every other country, you didn't get to choose. It was accident and force. Whoever the bar leader was could be that dickhead. Him and his friends just run the whole bar. He's kind of related to the owner. He sets a toxic bar. He makes you throw in for you. He's like, come on, we're getting coke. Like, I don't do coke. You know, everybody throws in, though. This guy doesn't do coke. Bullshit, come on. He ends up, oh, sorry, I accidentally dropped in the toilet. Yeah, sure, he did all the coke himself. You know, one of these guys. That's how the other countries were, you know? And judicial was like the bartender, based on the bartender at the convention, probably, because they're going, hey, settle an argument for us, bartender. Because that's who used to have to settle arguments. Before Google, you had to use the bartender, right? And that's what our judicial is, basically the bartender of the United States. They're there to tell you the original owner's intent. No. Gay marriage, equal protection, nope. No school prayer, no. You're allowed to bring, whatever. And yeah, and they were the guy that keeps the other two in control. It's a power balance. So when, you know, executives like, hey, just give me a little more executive power over there. It's like, oh, come on, you've had enough. No more, you know, no overreach. And the legislator's like, hey, I just want to pour something from my base. No, no, come on, you're cut off. That's enough right now, you know. Then the Article 4 is just the franchise. We have this idea, we're going to go to each state, make each state like us. Each state had the same thing. You give him a psycho, alpha male, crazy guy, but he knew how to develop jobs. He sends, you know, resources, taxes back. You send him immigrants and a fort because the local coffee shop, if you're Starbucks, is going to be a problem, you know. The local tribes, the fort was just basically a guy with a baseball bat warming up. He's not hitting them yet, but, you know, like, what's his problem? What's he going to do, you know? And I realize I have a bad swing. It's been like that my whole life. Yeah, and so basically that was the franchise guy. He sends back taxes, and if things work out, we're going to give you a star on the flag. It was a big deal in those days, get a star. 18, you know what I mean? It means you can fuck with anybody and they can't fuck with you, if I can quote Goodfellas for the first but not the last time. And, you know, Article 5 is just basically saying whatever we whatever we decide, we still have to leave room in case later they want to make amendments, they want to ratify, because, you know, bars change. They might want to put a karaoke machine in here someday. We don't know. Styles change. A pool table, we can't tell them what to do completely. Article 6, if you trade with other countries, everybody had to be on the same page. It's like if it was a bar, you'd say, look, we tell them no T-shirts, no sneakers. You got to say the same thing on Wednesday that we say on Tuesday. And Article 7, just basically, look, it's going to be, sign it, cut the ribbon, open for business, right? So they open for business, freedom of speech. That was the Bill of Rights was the big, that was the big thing, freedom of speech. Because nobody had freedom of speech in the world. No, you can boo the president. Boo! Nobody says anything. You could never boo the king. Nobody booed the king. The king's coming by, boo. Six archers be like, I got him. Don't worry, I got the son of a bitch. This guy's suicidal, you know? Yeah, you could say whatever. Because the founding fathers, the brilliant ones were brilliant. They're like every other country, they're like, don't let the people speak. Who knows what'll happen? That's how revolutions happen. That's how uprisings happen. These founding fathers were like, let them speak. Go ahead. You want to say something? Go ahead, man. Whatever you want. Guy's like, okay, we think it's bullshit what's going on. Okay, duly noted. Thank you very much. See, wasn't it interesting what he just said? See, I told you they got nothing. Don't worry about it, you know. Because just because you can speak doesn't mean you can change anything. And you can speak in this. I think we've proven nothing, if not that everybody can say whatever they want. You can even yell fire in a crowded movie theater and some lawyer will take the case. But that doesn't mean we speak freely. You can get fired from your job. You can get, you know, castigated, censored, boycotted, shunned by your community. People go, but the government doesn't do it. No, but the tyranny of the mob does it. You know, depending on who you are and what you say and what's considered offensive in different time. Different time periods, different things are offensive. If I was up here 60 years ago, every ethnic joke, people would be like, ah, ha, ha, hilarious. But if I cursed once, every guy would be waiting for me outside because the wife was there and try to drop me with a straight right hand, which is all anyone threw in those days, the straight right. Because you cursed in front of the little woman. But now cursing, everybody curse. Little kids curse. Little kids, you go to Chuck E. Cheese, the kid's like, ah, it's fucking Chuck E. Cheese. All right, yeah. He's telling the other kids, you know, but it's my birthday. It's just a pizza. Am I right or wrong? Yeah, you said it. Fucking, yeah. But if you even mention ethnicity, people feel a little bit, your stomach feels tense. If you even mention someone's ethnicity, everyone's like, wow, wow. If I told you a true story, this Mexican guy came up to me, ho, whoa. Why does this guy have to be Mexican in your true story? I don't understand. You know, you have to speak in the most idealized, pasteurized, homogenized, colorblind at all. You know, you feel, if you notice, you're like, this guy comes up to me, could have been Mexican, I don't know, I don't care. I shouldn't have been a Central American, Hispanic, Latino. It was a man, all right? Wait a minute. I was sexist. I don't know if it was a man. Could have been a woman. Could have been LGBT. I don't know. I mean, It was a life form came up to me. You know what? Hold on. I'd like to start the story by apologizing for, obviously, I'm coming from a place of Western entitled, unconscious, paternalistic fear of the other, and, you know, non-heteronormative, gender-specific. I'd like to start by saying that this apology has been a learning experience for me and a, you know, a teachable moment, and I think I'm gonna do some soul-searching, and hopefully, down the line, I can start a nonprofit for other people that are telling stories, you know. And sure, you applaud, but half the country, when you tell that apology, groveling, they're like, now you're starting to understand. You're really starting to understand how to feel and think and talk. That's right, that's very good. You know, that's how people, you know, words, we're offended by words in this country, which means we're a success, we're a total success. When you're offended by language, that means you're success. A lot of other countries, it still comes down to people coming in, I can't take the intolerance anymore, they tell us. What happened? The other religion came and burned down my village. I know what you mean. I heard some inflammatory rhetoric recently. And they're like, but what does it mean, inflammatory rhetoric? That means like flames, like what they literally did to your village. That's what they figuratively did to my sense of, it was oppressive speech, if you know what I'm trying to say by that. It was kind of supremacist, oppressive by its very nature. It's hard to explain. Words hurt, words are loaded, words are triggers in our society. You know, the Second Amendment and the First Amendment overlapping at all times. And of course, you know, we can blame the press. First of all, the press is not even the press anymore. The press is now all of us. Anybody has any kind of a computer or a phone, you're actually the press. How do you think the journalists feel at this point? You could win 6 Pulitzers, cover 8 wars, but some blogger gets more hits on you that week, and they're tagged, they're it, and you're out. That's it. And the press was locked out of the convention, by the way. They were locked out. The Founding Fathers, freedom of the press, starting in a couple of months when we're done. They shut the windows and locked them out of the whole thing, you know? Because the press, and now the press, obviously there's 2 sides, and that's it. You have to see the country one way or the other. There's no middle ground. There's nobody in the middle. You have to see this country as either it's in danger of becoming a right-wing, Islamophobic, homophobic, xenophobic, nothing to fear but phobia itself taking over, or it's a left-wing socialist, terrorist, anarchist about to take over. There's nobody in the middle. I mean, there's people in the middle like myself, but nobody, there's no party for, if you're like me, pro-gun, pro-choice, pro-death penalty, pro-gay marriage, all those things, what do they add up to? Anti-overcrowding. Thank you, but nowadays, it's only the most fervent true believers and the fastest typists that run this country, you know? And the news is basically just people, the instigator friend. They just try to get you to see what the other side said about a story. That's all the news. You know, your instigator friend is like, you know what they said about you? I shouldn't have brought it up. You're gonna get mad. You're like, now you brought it up. Now I gotta, I don't know what to tell you. You know, tell me, you know? That's what the news is. They're like cable, old cable. It's like, you know what they said about that story? The other side, will you hear this? You're gonna get pissed. You're like, what? Like, I'll tell you after the commercial. Just hang out for a second. And that's all our news is. What the other side said about a story. It's never the story. There's no, that's irrelevant, whatever the story was. It's what the other side said. It's news once removed. There's no real news. There's real news on the scroll underneath. Peruvian earthquake, thousands dead. Nigerian massacre, hundreds fear. Bangladeshi factory fire. And our journalists are going, do you think Chris Christie is too fat to run for president? Be honest. Is it fat shaming, in fact? Do you think that? You're sitting there watching a former Secretary of State argue with a lap band surgeon, you forgot why. You're like, why am I watching this again? But we all swim, and people just want to convince other people. That's the whole thing. Our country keeps trying. That's why we're gonna break up, because people are like, you've got to change. You've got to say. No, the whole country is based on the fact you don't have to say. Everybody's gonna have their opinion, but everybody's still trying to force everybody to have another opinion. And it's like religious fervor. The Sunnis and Shiites. That's how I feel about the extreme political parties in our country. left and right, Sunnis and Shiites, just trying to get you. Go to this website. Do you understand? Just look at this website. Politics is a new religion. If it's not the new religion, why are all the political shows on Sunday morning? That's my question. Now, because guess what? Sunday was for church. People came to this country to go to church. They came over here because they're like, I heard you go to church there. Nobody busts your balls, you know. Other countries, they'd let you in, but they're like, oh, what's that around your neck before we let you in? Is that a cross or is that a fish? You're like, it's a star. All right, come here on this line. Feel me? You know. Over here, you go to church, and people loved church back in those days because life was so shit. Church was actually excitement. Church was the only entertainment there was. It was like, that was the thing. With comedy, music, it was everything. Therapy, because the world stunk. Before electricity, you just work all day pulling tree roots, raking, you know, hoeing. And then once a week, you know, that night you'd be sitting in your bed, just no electricity, just sitting on the bed waiting in the dark for the next day to start.